Welcome to the Outsource Accelerator podcast. This is a short format podcast where we explore business and outsourcing mastery. My name is Derek Gallimore, and I am really excited to bring you the leading podcast in outsourcing. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Outsource Accelerator podcast. My name is Derek Gallimore, and this is episode number 228. So today, this is an interesting podcast, I certainly hope. Anyway, I am joined by John Canavo of the Texas A&M University, specifically the Mays Business School of Mays Innovation Research Center. He runs this Innovation Research Center. They focus on the future of work, with a large part of that being outsourcing and the globalization of the workforce. So it's certainly a really super interesting conversation to have with John. John, his boss is actually Dr. Korok Ray. I have interviewed him previously on this podcast, so I certainly recommend you go back and listen to those episodes. They are episodes 187 and 188. But today we talk to John because he is visiting the Philippines. He has been working in outsourcing now for 6 years, or certainly associated with it, and it is his first time over to the Philippines to see what it's really like, really going on. I am hosting John in Manila, and I'm connecting him to a few people. So this is the pre-interview. I get a sense of what John thinks of outsourcing, of the Philippines, of the potential prior to him coming to the country. And then the next episode will be John after he has been to the country and his opinion of the country, outsourcing, and the potential after that. So I, of course, haven't recorded the second podcast at the time of recording this, so it will be super, super interesting to see the contrast. And, of course, with the magic of outsourcing, with the magic of podcasting, all you have to do is go to the next episode and have a listen for the contrast. So super exciting, and I'm actually eagerly awaiting the results myself. I hope you do enjoy. So, of course, if you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/228. Enjoy. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. Today, I am joined by John Canavo. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Derek. How are you today?
Fantastic, fantastic. And this is a radical new format. Well, it's not really a new format, but what we're doing is John is in Texas at the moment. He's in the US and has actually never left the US. And he's about to come over here to Manila, Philippines. And the reasons for that we will find out very soon. But I thought it would be a fantastic experience to measure people's expectations of the Philippines and their sort of pre-knowledge of the Philippines compared to after they arrive in the Philippines. And now John, of course, is no slacker. He knows and has intimate knowledge of the Philippines and certainly the workforce of the Philippines, as again we will get to know shortly. So should be really interesting comparison. And with the magic of podcasting, as soon as this episode will have finished, then we will be able to follow this up with John's learned opinion of his experience here in the Philippines. And so the reason why I'm doing this is for people that do outsource, and I know a lot of the outsourcing community, we strongly encourage people to visit the Philippines. Now, I know that's not necessarily easily available or possible for a lot of people, but it just opens up the understanding, the horizons, and also then the potential for outsourcing for people's organizations. So I've rattled on a little bit long there. I apologize, John, and I apologize to the audience. But I suppose, John, initially you can introduce yourself far better than I. Would you be able to just give people a background to yourself? Where you currently work now and the program that you're coordinating and the reason that you're coming over here to the Philippines.
Sure, Derek. Thank you so much. Again, my name is John Canavo. I'm the program coordinator for the Mays Innovation Research Center, which is based in the Mays Business School at Texas A&M University in College Station, Texas. My experience with outsourcing began as an undergraduate student at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C. I had the fortune of working then with my partner now, who is Dr. Karok Ray. I used to be his research assistant at George Washington years ago. We ended up meeting up years later. I moved out to College Station, and I now manage Dr. Ray's research center after he moved to Texas A&M, which of course is the Mays Innovation Research Center. I've been there since January of last year, so going on a year now. The center itself was founded in September of 2017, and our mission is to understand innovation broadly, look at when it happens, why it happens, what leads to innovation, what gets in the way, and understand how researching innovation and the future of work can help us understand how to lead to more economic freedom, both domestically and around the world.
Fantastic. And we, of course, did interview Dr. Karok Ray on, on this podcast, which we're honored to have him on the podcast. That was episode 187 and 188, if people want to go back and listen to that. And I do encourage people to do that. And I suppose, you know, just drilling down on that then, the Mays Innovation Center, and you, from what I understand, you do a lot of research into the innovation of specifically employment and the future of employment and where that is going to take humanity. And how do you see, you know, because there's a lot of conflict, I suppose. Well, there's a lot of conversation now about AI, automation, robotics, but then also there's a lot of conversation about outsourcing and potentially kind of trade barriers and things like that, trying to prevent outsourcing. How do you see all of these massive changes in the employment market and, I suppose, the labor market affecting each other?
Yeah, so something that I've come to think is a little bit interesting about outsourcing is that people, some people you might find have a bit of an interpretation on outsourcing where they've kind of made it into a four-letter word where, you know, don't say outsourcing, outsourcing's bad, outsourcing is leading to all these issues in the United States or in other Western countries around the world. But we've shied away from that interpretation, and I think the approach that we've taken is more that regardless of the initial feelings that one may have about outsourcing, it's just needs to be accepted as something that is going to happen and is happening currently and has been happening, in fact, for quite some time. So instead of being upset that, oh no, what's going to happen when we move jobs overseas or when artificial intelligence develops more and more aspects of jobs are replaced, instead of being upset about it, we want to understand more about it to get ready for that that progression as it's already moving and how it will develop further in the future. So that a little bit of background on that. As we look at outsourcing, mainly it's through our research on online labor markets and understanding how online labor markets are spreading economic opportunity to people around the world. We find that while IQ and talent are probably spread equally around the globe, unfortunately, opportunities are not spread equally. But online labor markets are really increasing that that amount of opportunity that people have with an internet connection, a computer, and some determination. People can have access to opportunities that maybe they wouldn't have access to without the presence of these online labor markets. So we've been looking into these for some time. This began, I guess our research started looking into Odesk and Elance, which now today have combined into Upwork, which is a massive platform. Looking at other companies like TopTal, Winolo, TaskUs, Thumbtack, how companies like this are really providing opportunity here in the United States to businesses and around the world to individuals. And what we found, as many people I think who are involved in outsourcing or BPOs have found, is that the Philippines, especially Manila, has really developed into this hub of outsourcing opportunity for Filipinos, and it's kind of become the go-to market for call centers, a number of other outsourcing opportunities, but mainly as it pertains to us for users of online labor markets.
Right. And I was actually listening to an interview yesterday, and there is a guy called Bjorn Lomborg, of the president of Copenhagen Consensus Center. And he basically was looking at ways of quantifying spend on improving the world. And now there's a lot of, I'll get to the point in this in a second, there was a lot of spend in a lot of different directions, everything from malaria to TB to sexual health initiatives to anything across the world. And he, it's their mission to basically put dollar for dollar the cost versus impact of actually having a positive impact and moving the world, you know, to a better place. In the top five out of hundreds, literally hundreds listed by the WHO, it was actually free trade. And they found that, you know, for relatively little money spent, you could free up trade, you could reduce tariffs, the politicizing of international trade, and he said the impact of that is the furthest reaching of any other intervention they could possibly do. And there's a lot of people talking about that now, I think, isn't there, in terms of the benefits of having a completely networked world where it's not just one country against another, but it's literally, you know, potentially 7 billion people working in unison and creating greater economic output for everyone.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It sounds like that article is pretty spot on with what we are looking at, or the interview rather that you were listening to. It really seems aligned with the idea that we've taken regarding innovation, which is, you know, over time by studying innovation at a deep level. And looking into the future of work, we can see the interaction between markets and economies and technology, and seeing how by combining those things, how can we make trade more free, markets more free, and how is that as a whole going to make society more free? Like you said, the idea that at some point in time, perhaps it is a situation where we do have 7 billion people working together at once, which sounds great. Of course, it would be quite an investment globally, and would take quite a bit of time to put together. But in theory, I think it should be able to happen if we allow more opportunities to be spread around the world through free trade and open markets.
Yeah, it's fascinating potential. So the world is undoubtedly becoming more of one place. And so the background and the reason why you're coming to the Philippines, you have studied platforms like work platforms, as you said, like Upwork, and you yourself have your own internal platform. Is that right? Do you want to just explain a little bit about the workforce that you have personally been working with over the last year and how that came to, I suppose, mature?
Sure. So a few years ago, I guess 5 or 6 years ago now, when we started working more closely on this idea, this was back at George Washington, before the center even existed or before we really knew exactly what we were doing, and we wanted to learn more about it, we decided to build an online laboratory of our own to not only increase our productivity, our efficiency, but to take the data that we had access to, because it was our platform, and understand more about what's going on. You know, we could have done a similar thing by just using an existing online platform in terms of interacting with global workers and increasing efficiency for having our own tasks completed, but we wouldn't have had access to the data, because of course the company that we'd be using would have its own data. So we created our own, which it's a simple name, but we call it Job Market. And over the last several years, we have sent out close to 7,000 jobs to global workers around the world. We post a job that could be transcribing a dictation, performing simple research, translating one language to another, building slide, writing in LaTeX, writing some Python code, a number of tasks that we've posted over the years. And people from all over the world have claimed them. As we found, and as I had mentioned earlier, eventually we find that folks in the Philippines have claimed more jobs than anyone else around the world. But we have worked with people in South Africa, India, Bangladesh, Malaysia, as probably the other biggest countries outside of the Philippines. So by posting these jobs, it helps us in the short term. For example, if we have notes on a conference and it's a 20-minute audio file, instead of taking all that time to sit in front of the computer and type it up, we just take some time, sit down, speaking to our mobile app. It goes to the website. Soon after, some global worker around the world will claim the job, type it up, and give us back the transcription, which is incredibly helpful and saves a lot of time. That's the short-term benefits. But the long-term is it informs our research and helps us to understand what exactly can be outsourced and what is a little bit harder to just to use a mobile app and post a job and have somebody complete. The goal is on our end to put as little front-loaded effort for ourselves and just have the output. So the easiest way would be the dictations, because it's really no effort to us at all. You just hit record, you speak, you hit upload, and that's it. But some of the other jobs, if it's a more complex research task, that's going to take more time on our end to explain the job, whether it be in writing or by speaking it, and then to work with the person who claims that job to kind of fine tune the output. With a transcription of a dictation, it's really just whether the person hears the words, understands them, and types them. But the research job, it might take a few iterations. So we want to understand how complex of a research task could you put online, and how much effort on our end do we need to get high quality output? And that's been one of the biggest lessons we've learned over the years. So where I come in terms of the trip to the Philippines is we have a number of folks based all over the country who have been working on Job Market for years now and earning a living. And some of these folks have very kindly agreed to meet with me when I get to the country next week. And I'll be able to sit down with them and really just learn anything that they're willing to share. What was it like growing up? What's their experience with their local education system? What brought them to remote work? Have they ever worked a traditional job, such as showing up to a business and working there? Have they only ever done remote work? How do they find Job Market? Things like that, and trying to understand who our jobs are going to. And then that way that'll inform our decisions as we move forward in posting new jobs and trying to get new workers to use the platform. Eventually, how complex of jobs can we put up and be completed in a reasonable amount of time?
Right. It's a fascinating concept, isn't it? Because you're almost, like, if I can, my sort of humble interpretation is it's kind of like Amazon Turk, in that it's almost trying to automate something using humans. And then I suppose the friction then comes in when the increasing complexity of the role takes more contextual understanding, takes more background understanding of the role that you're actually asking. I assume when you're asking for a transcription, it's really self-explanatory and the job just kind of rolls on. Whereas if it's research-based, then they need some sort of context, understanding, maybe even experience of working with you previously before the job is really smooth. Yeah.
I think that's a very fair interpretation. Yeah, that's very well worded. Thank you.
Yeah, and it's because we, you know, we deal with this, and we see a very distinct bifurcation in the market of the WeWork, sorry, not WeWork, Upwork and freelancer kind of jobs, which are one-off project jobs versus ongoing outsourcing. You know, and one of them is more akin to obviously contract and project work, and then the other one is more akin to just employment, but just people are sitting in a different location. Do you find have you found that the people on your job market that have been with you years, there's obviously a distinct advantage to them because they're already up to speed with a lot of contextual and familiarity and those sort of kind of experience based things?
Yeah, I think absolutely, and that's, you know, pretty. I think it's to be expected. You know, so
yeah.
we've had some people who have been working on job market for years, and if it's something as simple as just knowing the sound of our voice, you know, everyone has a distinctive sound, and if you know how people pronounce a certain word, then you'll know you'll listen for it. You can spell it correctly next time, because if we go through a job and we notice that generally all the typist jobs, the transcriptions come back great, and we'll just leave a comment in the review box, something like, thank you for doing a great job. But sometimes if there is a recurring error, we'll just make a note of it. And then we find that people who have received the feedback, their work improves dramatically as they claim future jobs. Whereas if we're a little sloppier on our end and we just take the output and authorize the payment and don't say anything, then, which is also to be expected, the person doesn't really ever improve. So that makes plenty of sense. So things as simple as just clarifying what we're saying over these dictations. But where it becomes very important is the research jobs. Folks who have been claiming research jobs for a long time know the intricacies of, you know, how we want an Excel file formatted, or if we're asking for some data entry into a file, what's the best source to go to find that information. And those who have not been on the site for very long, the output just is not as good as people who have claimed a number of jobs. And that's pretty interesting to us as we look at the data in terms of efficiency statistics or ratings. We rate each job on a scale of 1 to 5. And then the amount that each person earns, because of course we have access to how much each person has been paid over the years. And the rate definitely goes up over time on proportionally job by job.
Right. Yeah. It's and you know, with outsourcing, we commonly preach you've really got to invest a lot of time up front. And you know, I think people underestimate really the upfront time investment that people have to make into their teams. You know, and it really is, it's a human on the other end of the computer, and
right.
People have to invest in them emotionally and sort of also bring over the culture and these more tacit items. And I think a lot of the outsourcing failures are when people just expect to be able to press a green button and have a task produce for them. And now I think the upside of outsourcing, when it's an ongoing, permanent, continuous role, is that you only have to do that once in theory. Whereas, you know, if it's a lot of project work on Upwork, then people are really facing having to kind of bring people up to speed each time, which I think can kind of fatigue the enthusiasm for the sector. But anyway, so we've got you on this call because I just want to get some insight, and I'm really excited about, we're going to meet here, and I'm honored to be able to show you around Makati and
Miller. Yes, thank you.
And we're going to go and visit a few BPOs, but I just want to now kind of get a little bit of insight into your thoughts. And I suppose we can do kind of quick fire round, just in terms of your kind of flippant, I suppose, reflections on things. And we can dive into this deeper, I think, because there'll be a lot more to talk about once you've actually come to the country. But I suppose in a relatively, I mean, spend as much time on this as you want, but what, and I suppose on a more superficial level, what are some unknowns, fears, and concerns that you have for Manila and the Philippines and your presence here?
Sure, yeah. Like you said, it'll definitely easier to find a good way to answer this question once I spend some time there. But my first concern, I guess, would be something that you and I have discussed over email, which is getting around. I want to be able to do a lot while I'm there. I want to be able to meet with people and get around the area, because it's probably easier for me in some cases to travel to where some of the workers are located than it would be for those people to travel to where I'm located. So I'm a little concerned that getting around Manila or even getting outside of Manila by car is not possible. So I hope that I can find some way to make that work a little bit better, just because I want to make sure that the time there is used to its fullest potential. Something else, and this is just because, as you mentioned early on in the podcast, you know, I'm not a world traveler. Like you said, never left the country or anything. So I am concerned about jet lag and how that's going to affect the amount of time that I can spend working on what I need to be doing. You know, I'm hoping that I can just get there and get right to work, because I don't want to waste any time. But we'll see how that goes as well. That's not really specific to the Philippines as it is more to going anywhere.
Very relevant, isn't it? Because I'm sitting here at 6 a.m. and you're probably sitting there at about 5 p.m. at night. It is something with international work and trade that is never going to go away, is it? Even with sort of the march of technology, you're never really going to get rid of time differences and jet lag, are you?
Sure. Yeah. I'd like to think that it's just going to work out, but we'll see how that goes next week. So energy, getting around, what else?
In terms of, because we have a lot of apprehensions and also, you know, there's political instability and this stuff can really throw around a country's economy, especially when you've got the sort of Fortune 500s making decisions on things that they read, in these papers and reports. You've obviously been working with the Philippines for many years now, so there are levels of comfort beyond the typical sort of layman. But what are your thoughts in terms of political instability, in terms of the sort of choosing the Philippines as the right place to do business?
Sure. I mean, you know, it you can't pretend like it isn't there, you know, the political instability. I think your interpretation of it would obviously be a bit more accurate than mine, just from what we read in the news. But it seems like based on the current government, I would imagine that companies might have some apprehension before they decide to base operations, or at least part of their operations in the Philippines, based on issues concerning political instability. Reports of corruption are probably not what companies are going to want to see if they're looking for a stable place to operate. But again, that's just headline news that we get in the United States. I don't know that personally, because I've never experienced it.
Fantastic. And so what about relative capacity and capability of people? Now, you said earlier that all of these systems, these platforms, they're really creating, and this is my word, what I believe is a truer meritocracy for the world economy.
Sure.
In that basically people who can do the task, who can perform, it's mattering less and less where you're sitting, what university you went to and things like that. What are your thoughts in terms of, I suppose, the Philippines fulfilling the role initially as like kind of powering the world in terms of a back-end operation and in terms of a fulfillment center?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, something that I got at toward the beginning of the podcast and what you're mentioning now, I do believe in, and I think our research indicates that online labor markets and outsourcing are truly spreading opportunity to areas of the world that probably have less opportunity for employment than we see here in the United States in a lot of major markets. You know, as we see the internet spread, we're going to see massive changes in the global economy, with an estimated, what, billion new people using the internet for the first time over the next few decades. People could probably operate on the internet in two different capacities, or both. They could be producers, or they could be consumers. I think it's more likely that they're going to be producers, and the output that they're going to create is going to directly affect consumers down the line at some point in time. But just having the opportunity to become a producer at any point in someone's life, wherever that person's located around the world, is incredible. It's amazing that we're in the middle of that right now, even when opportunities in education aren't as plentiful, or in other areas that are going to lead to economic growth. Even when that isn't there, just by having the ability to access the internet and earn a living, I think we're going to see some pretty impressive changes that hopefully will balance out some of the disparity that we see in an achievement gap. Like you said, if outsourcing gets to the point where it creates a true global meritocracy, then I think that'd be a wonderful thing. And of course, we need some time to get to that point, and a lot of very active effort on the parts of governments and companies. It can't just happen over time. Someone needs to make it happen. But that would be great, and I think very possible, not just a pipe dream.
Cool. And so then you have been working with the job market, with the Filipino workforce for many years now. How well do you feel that you've got to know them? And, you know, you've even been studying them and, you know, collecting data. And this is more, I think, in value of the comparison chat we have afterwards. But do you feel that you kind of understand how your colleagues tick, how they interact, and you know, or do you feel that you sort of there is a filter through the computer monitors and through Skype and things like that?
Yeah, I can't pretend to really know a whole lot about the lives of the workers. I might know their tendencies based on output. I might know who's a better performer, who's more eager to participate in this type of industry. But I really can't say that I know the people. It's hard to know anyone that that you've never met in person, especially when we're in this completely separated, not employer-employee, but a similar relationship. It's definitely hard to really know people. That's something that I'm most excited about this trip, is not that I can learn someone's entire life over meeting them for an hour or so, but I am excited to really know the human aspect of job market and get to know people so we can understand them better, they can understand us better, and both sides can benefit. But in certain circumstances, we have had the opportunity to get to know some of our workers better. There was a woman who actually now does not use job market, but her name was Cheryl. She was a nurse in Manila for a long time, and she actually told us that she made more money typing up the dictations, the audio files, than she did as a nurse. And she used the funds that she received from job market to support her mother, who, when she had gotten older, had moved in with Cheryl and needed somebody to support her. And Cheryl did just that. She eventually made so much money by typing up the audio files that she quit being a nurse, stopped using job market, and started her own medical transcription company. And she now employs other people to type up notes for doctors and nurses based in the Philippines. So I thought that was a pretty fascinating story and really great. I hope Cheryl has an opportunity to meet with me during the time that I'm there. because we do we have still stayed in touch. But if that's not possible, that's too bad. But it really is amazing to see the amount of opportunity created just by opening your computer, spending some extra hours at night during the night typing up some audio files and what she was able to achieve. So I think that's a pretty great anecdote, but I can't say that it's truly indicative of all of the hundreds of people that use Job Market.
No, and I do actually see a huge potential for outsourcing to really, I mean, of course it benefits the economy and the people, but I really do feel that outsourcing more than other forms of industrialization, I suppose, really enables people to upskill and move up a career ladder, even if they're not really supported by an institution that will push them up a career ladder. If people are working in a factory, they really have no opportunity to go up a career ladder because they can't really go out on their own and have the machines on their own, because they're sort of reliant on the infrastructure of the factory. Whereas I think people that do transcriptions, you know, they've got YouTube there, they've got Google there, they can learn to code, they can upskill themselves further, they can take on staff of their own, they can go and get jobs off the job market or other job boards. The potential's incredible, isn't it? You know, and I think that example that you cited there is fantastic to see.
Yeah, I agree. I think everything you said is it's definitely relevant to what we're looking at and what we hope to see. You know, of course, we can't pretend this is a pure act of altruism. This mission to upskill workers around the world. That's not the original goal, but it is a fantastic byproduct. You know, ours our goal is academic. It's research based. We want to know. We want to know more about innovation and the spread of global opportunities. But what we're finding out in the process, you know, those are the nice stories that that make the research a little bit more worthwhile. And if people upskill and increase their own chances of earning a better living in the process, then that's just fantastic.
Fantastic. And so it's, and I'm sure, and you know, this is the exciting thing, when you do come over here, you will experience more of those stories and see the real life behind these people. And, you know, it really does add a sort of a really exciting perspective to this whole outsourcing gig. So I'm super excited for you. But anyway, with the magic of podcasting, we will come right back and we will have your opinions in the next episode of your visit here. So do stay tuned. Okay, that was John Canavo of the Mays Innovation Research Center. If you want any of the show notes, then go to outsourceaccelerator.com/228. And of course, as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.